Hey there, White Sox fans. It is Southside Sox podcast number 136. We're off for like a month and then we're back. Bam, bam, two in a row. Hey, there's lots of stuff to talk about. There isn't, but we just haven't talked to you for a while, so we're talking to you. If you hear some weird sort of like droning in the background, technical difficulties, okay? Nobody's snoring. Technical difficulties, okay? We have a five-pack of my favorite Southside Sox participants, writers, podcasters. They will be chatting you up about the state of the White Sox. And I think we didn't do an immediate podcast. I don't know. It felt maybe a little odd to do too quickly. I know a lot of sites did, which is totally cool because we have to address the situation with Liam Hendricks. Obviously, he was dealt some really, really devastating news. And of course, if there's anyone who's going to fight and beat the hell out of a tough diagnosis or even prognosis, it's going to be Liam Hendricks. And of course, he's one player in all of baseball that really any team, any team's fans can get behind to root for. So I guess we lead this thing off, you know, of course, not about the ramifications for on the field because the White Sox are already in trouble. This doesn't help. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about just your reactions to the news and, you know, thoughts about Liam, anything you want to throw out there, because obviously this has been a pretty jarring and absolutely and completely unexpected to hear that this prime athlete is going to be facing the challenge that he is. So any thoughts there?
I think for me, one of the things when I first heard about it was like Liam is such like a giving person, and like no matter what team he's been with, that's been very clear that giving back to the community has been huge for him. And I know for people who are givers, when they're hit with a hard situation like this, that it's often hard for them to be the receiver. So I really hope that him and Christy during this time can really let people like give to them. And so, yeah, that's kind of my hope for them, I guess. And this is that because they have showered so many people and been so wonderful to animals and people, and environments and pretty much anything you can imagine, that during this time, they'll kind of let that sense of community envelop them and help them get through the hard part and heal and move forward as quickly as they can.
I think it merits mentioning, let me jump in. I always hand the microphone off and then jump back in like an idiot, but merits mentioning that two of our participants here really did cover that story for us in, you know, and obviously it's a very challenging one. Dante was right on it. Dante Jones writing the piece, obviously, you know, inserting, you know, his own, you know, sort of personal experience, family experience there, and getting a nice, quick, but very special and moving piece out there, you know, the night of the news. And then I thought Melissa had a very, again, this is not a beat anybody wants, of course, had a very clever and upbeat and positive spin on it rather than what Liam, you know, faces looking ahead. But really, hey, here's a way to support him, and that is support this guy's causes. He has been so front and center, as Melissa just mentioned. Then to put a story out there with links, I thought was very useful and a great resource, and I appreciate her doing that. And of course, Dante, for covering Night Of, even though it was a little difficult to get rolling. I appreciate both of you doing that. And again, I'll step away from the mic now. Other thoughts about Liam and you know, how we're looking at things?
It's one of those things where I was just crushed because – I feel like every single person on this Zoom call right now has dealt with some form of this, whether it's, you know, a family member, a friend, anything. And, you know, I've lost friends to cancer that hadn't even reached 40 yet. Yeah. So, you know, it's something crushing. And it's one of those things where he's like the toughest guy on the team. You know, he's so lively and active, but just amazing. And it's one of those things where you realize how real and how scary cancer can be, because it can happen to anyone, including like your favorite closer on your favorite team. So it was just so surreal to me to realize that like he's in phenomenal shape, he's an amazing human being, and he can still get it. So yeah, a real bummer.
Yeah. Anyone else? This, you know, we don't have to have a round table on Liam Hendricks, but anyone else want
to
jump in?
Go ahead. Just great job to Dante and Melissa on all the coverage, and very well said right there. It's almost, honestly, it is almost difficult to not have a little bit of anger filter in there at just sort of the rote unfairness of the whole thing. You know, it's Liam has, by all accounts, been nothing but a light and a source of positive energy in just about every clubhouse he's ever been in. And, you know, characters like him with what he does on and off the field, there are just far too few of them in the sport of baseball in general. And it is devastating to see something like that happen to, you know, not, it's hard to say that anyone deserves these things, but as someone who unequivocally really does not deserve to have to go through something like this. So, I'd you know, echo everything Melissa says and hope and believe he'll get all the support. And, you know, no one is, by the same token, going to deserve it more when he makes his comeback and we'll get to step out in the mound again. And, you know, we know he's going to make the most of that moment too. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we're all with him, of course. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
The whole situation obviously is a very, very bad one, and it's really a tough one to discuss. And yeah, it's obviously just obviously I'm unhappy that we're, you know, having this conversation, you know, today about this, but one thing that's been good to see is, you know, all of the overwhelming support you see across the baseball community online about, you know, even, you know, fans of other teams I've seen them, you know, kind of chipping in and saying, like, you know, we're in, you know, 100% of Liam Hendricks. And, you know, that's been nice to see the community kind of come together over this. Like you said, like, you know, it's, yeah, if there's anyone who is going to fight this with everything they have, it's probably Liam Hendricks. He's just a very fierce competitor, and I do think that he will be able to recover from it, and that's, you know, nothing I would hope for more than that.
It's always go ahead, Dante.
I was gonna say, first things first, excuse my French, but fuck cancer. Like, that's first of all, because, like everybody said, it's one of those things, like, when you hear about it, you kind of go numb because you don't expect to get that news. Cancer is not something that when you hear cancer, you're just like, oh God, is this person gonna, you know, you think the worst. Right. So, I'm happy that all of us and most people I've seen completely took the baseball aspect out of this for him, because at the end of the day, baseball is a game that we all enjoy, but it's a game versus Liam Hendricks' life, and that matters so much more. And, you know, to someone that, as far as we know, is just such a great person, it sucks to see. And at the end of the day, I have full faith that he will fight harder than anyone's fought against cancer before. He will be on the mound again. Whether in a White Sox uniform or not, he will take the mound again. And I might be a bucket of tears when he does it, but it's going to be great.
Yeah. It's interesting too. You know, you have we've all obviously, as Crystal explained, you know, we've all personally, if not literally personally, certainly close to us, friends, family, older, younger, have dealt with this, if not specifically even cancer, terrible diagnoses, accidents, sports, baseball, the White Sox is sort of our safe haven. And of course, our safe haven's ruined on a weekly basis by decisions made, Rick Hahn flapping his lips, Jerry Reinsdorf doing whatever, Tony La Russa getting hired, and so on. But I mean, that's an entirely different category. part of my reaction is, you know, this is usually something you think of. There's 29 other teams. You think of it as being a challenge that maybe Trey Mancini in Baltimore is going through, or, you know, a player on the Cubs or with the Yankees or a minor leaguer. And, you know, rarely does, and not that it changes things, not that you still don't wish for that person to, you know, recover and be able to fulfill their career, but rarely does it hit, you know, right on your doorstep. And certainly it doesn't mean I care any more or less. I'm not callous toward it if it's not on the White Sox, but the idea that this is, I mean, literally one of our top players, certainly our top character, our top leader, our top, you know, with Jose Abreu gone, our top carer on the team. It's like, wow. I mean, it really couldn't hit you between the eyes any more than that. Not to say if, you know, it was Carlos Perez having a hard diagnosis, it wouldn't hit us any differently, but, you're sort of used to looking at it, you know, sort of across the aisle. And the fact that now it's landed right here in Sox Park and in that clubhouse, and, you know, with the team that we love so much, it, you know, it actually makes your head spin just a little bit more. It's a different sense of numbness than it would be in hearing about a diagnosis or even an accident that does befall, you know, players in the minors or even in the major leagues. On the Liam Hendricks note, of course, we are, you know, 100%. Supportive. Again, Melissa's article, great thing to look up. Probably should pin it somewhere on the site just so people can refer to it and check out the sort of things that it meant so much to him. It doesn't necessarily reflect what your beliefs or supports, political leanings, etc., are. But you know what? What he's supporting isn't political. It's human. It's animals. There's a number of different things that he's really put. You know, he's a guy who. Who walks the walk. And so we should pin that piece so that people, if you are interested in supporting the types of things that he supports and that all of us here at Southside Sox can get behind, check it out. It's a great piece and really well timed. And thank you, Melissa. Let's use this as a time to take a break and address the team. Guess we got to do it. We couldn't talk about Liam for 30 minutes, so I guess we got to talk about the White Sox. All right, stick with us if you want to. I promise it'll be fun. We'll cuss or something. Hang with us. Back in a minute. White Sox fans, Brett Ballantini here. Lucky enough to be hosting Southside Sox podcast number 136. Man, they're coming fast and furious now. In just a matter of a few days, we're going to be having our, I know Joe Reese is going to be around for it, our Cooperstown ballot discussion. Yeah, it's different than what we're going to be talking about here in the second half. And what we're going to be talking about first and foremost is, again, what new? Melissa Sage Mollenbach writing the pre-arb article and then the post-arb article because White Sox players didn't get to arbitration. And as usual, the White Sox just get close enough to what the agreed upon, if we want to say it that way, MLB trade rumors, arbitration estimates are. And the White Sox always just managed to fall just a little bit short just to say they could take that. Rick Hahn could take that back. It's like the episode of The Office where Michael Scott has the option of keeping the $600 so he can go and buy a fur coat at Burlington Coat Factory. Somehow Rick Hahn thinks he's going to get that money kicked back to him by Jerry Reinsdorf. And who knows? Maybe he will. Great news is no arbitration, no ugliness there. White Sox has settled with all five of their arbitration players. And are we happy about that? Oh, I could tell we're happy.
It's whatever, man. It's whatever.
I mean, there's no Lucas Giolito soap opera this year, I guess.
I don't care. I'm just happy that, like, Dylan got paid. That was the only thing I actually felt like I cared about. But, man, I'm just so sick and tired of their dumb drama.
Think about all the basketball cards that Dylan, I don't know if anybody ever watched any of his videos. Him and Carlos Rodon, like, opened basketball cards together. I guess they want to be, like, basketball card investors. So just think about the amount of basketball cards you can open now.
Those are my favorite videos. And sometimes I go back and just rewatch them.
Just in the armpit of the ballpark.
Like, oh, I need some serotonin. Let's go watch Dylan and Carlos Rodon open cards.
A bunch of Gatorade towels in the background.
That's just, if you're lacking serotonin, just go watch those.
Carlos, come back. Look where he is now.
I think for me, the arbitration, yeah, kind of like Crystal, it was just like, okay, well, good. There's no drama and we did what we needed to do. And, you know, that was good. But the Jose Ruiz thing did get some discussion going in our staff Slack. And so we were pretty heated one way or the other about like whether or not the Sox should have spent the money or, you know, whether it was a fine signing. So that one was a little bit, I guess, debatable.
Yeah. Contrarian Darren Black always finds a position to take against whoever is, you know, pro or con. So Malachi, I think, was definitely, I think he was the biggest con on Ruiz. And, you know, of course, Darren was, you know, defending him. But and here's the truth to reflect what O'Keefe is saying is like, yeah, okay, he's a 26 man. And I think Malachi's point of like, well, he shouldn't be guaranteed a spot on the team because he's the definition of mediocre. But I'm not sure if the White Sox can be choosers at this point. I guess the Ruizes are a dime a dozen, Malachi.
Well, I mean, it's less an issue of being choosers. It's the fact that even if you can't be a chooser, there are still Jose Ruizes out there. He's a replacement level pitcher. All the best to him personally, but he has shown very little over the last 3 years that he's someone that you really have to be guaranteeing a deal to. He did, you know, he has some of those nice numbers from the 2021 season, which, as I brought up in the aforementioned discussion, which I probably, you know, was, you know, spoke a little bit strongly in, but yeah, he was like statistically throwing in some of the lowest leverage situations in all of baseball. And that's not just been, that wasn't just true in 2021. It's been true for all three of the full seasons that he's played. Like, there's a stat. You can look at the average leverage index for when a reliever comes into a game, and that kind of tells you, gives you the sense of whether they're, you know, being brought into the game in big spots or whether it's, you know, low leverage, garbage time stuff. And so, you know, if it's a guy who for 3 years running, you don't want to use him outside of the lowest of low leverage situations when you're a team that, you know, nickel and dimes your ace when you do the things the White Sox do. We don't have to enumerate them here. When you operate the way the White Sox do, you know, guaranteeing a roster spot and an MLB salary is as small as it might be, good for him for getting paid. But, you know, when you operate with that kind of mom and pop spendthrift attitude, then, you know, guaranteeing money to the 25th man on the roster is just an objectively dumb decision, you know. So anyway, I'll shut up now.
Maybe they're making progress because they didn't actually, I mean, I don't know if this by definition guarantees him roster. Obviously they don't want to pay him $1 million in the minors, but I mean, a year ago we gave Vince Velasquez, you know, $3 million and even more importantly the roster spot. So I guess technically they could just make sure Jose pays for the food spread for weeks on end in Charlotte.
Maybe, you know, it doesn't, this is the last thing I'll say on it. I will cede the floor once again, is that the White Sox have a recent history, as bad as they are in many aspects of development, going back to, you know, Cody Hoyer and Matt Foster in 2020-2021 and Aaron Bummer in 2019 and 2018. And even, you know, some getting useful innings out of someone like Tanner Banks last year. And the White Sox do have a pretty solid recent history of, you know, promoting arms from within and getting solid, like, again, a replacement level to slightly better than replacement level production from minor leaguers. You got Jimmy Lambert right there. He might be a solid reliever that we haven't even seen. Like, you know, why is this where the resources are going when you're going to give us Gavin Sheets in right field to start the season? You know,
we call this the Tommy Barbie corollary. Of course, Tommy, now he's going to take the other 11 months off because he was with us for every Sox of his podcast. So, you know, see you in November, Tommy. But yes, this is the point Tommy makes all the time. It's like, this is the one thing the White Sox can do, and yet we're paying $1 million to Jose Ruiz, who didn't even come out of necessarily our organization and is a converted position player and so on. Hey, look at this. We got some mileage out of Jose Ruiz again. Wow.
I mean, that's how you can get out of him because he's so good.
My express apologies for feeling strongly about Jose Ruiz.
We will tag him in this podcast.
I have my flaws.
I think the, and you know, of course we can still touch on ARB stuff as well, but I mean, I think what broadens the discussion now is the fact that the White Sox still have done nothing, very little, nothing. I think some less than nothing to improve the team. I don't think the numbers have changed a ton in that the White Sox and Dodgers were pretty much running neck and neck as teams that have lost the most war in this offseason. And of course, I think as pointed out very quickly by anybody with any sort of baseball sense, is that the Dodgers, with like 18 top 100 prospects on a yearly basis, even though they seem to trade a handful away every year, can afford perhaps some of those losses, or maybe should even be trimming some of those guys. They got to trim something perhaps at some point to let the young guys into the majors. The White Sox have no such luxury. So clearly, if there's a team that's taken the biggest step back just in the off season, it's been the White Sox. And it doesn't seem like, I mean, this is rinse repeat from a month ago or whenever we had our last podcast. It doesn't seem like anything's coming around the corner. It doesn't seem like there's a trade in the bag. It doesn't seem like there's even a year ago when Rick Hahn made the curious decision to decide to pick up the option for Craig Kimbrel, thinking he was going to be able to make a magical deal. As it turns out, he made a better deal than any of us thought he could make. White Sox don't even have that in their pocket any longer, because their bullpen, I guess that's the strength on this team, is no longer a strength. So is this just are we like doing a backwards walk or a death march to spring training at this point? Pitchers and catchers report, and we just sort of breathe a death groan of, oh my God, here comes 2023. Is there anything that is going to sort of light the early 2023 before stuff starts to get rolling and it's too late?
Dude, they got worse.
Like, yeah.
They really did just completely backpedal any good that could come to 2023. They're going to be bad this year. It's going to be painful. I'm going to go to more Pirates games than White Sox games this year.
I mean, not 47 wins bad, but bad. Probably below
500. Maybe like 53 wins.
Oh, my God. Early sneak preview on the predictions podcast.
Oh, I'm out.
Games, I'm like, I can't do that. Like, we've seen some bad White Sox teams over the last, as long as all of us have been alive. And if they go, like, I think they're going to win like 81 games because they're mid. Like, they are like perfectly mid. And they don't deserve any praise for being mid. Like, it's what I was saying about, not the Yankees, but the Twins a minute ago. They re-signed Carlos Correa, as we all know. And it's like, yeah, you're still back to square one, so it doesn't matter. The White Sox didn't even do that. They don't have Jose Abreu anymore. And, you know, we can talk about that till the cows come home, because it's still a stupid decision to let him walk when you probably could have paid him, especially when he was the best hitter on the team all of last year. But this team is designed to be mid. That's why you have the arbitration things, where it's like, Rick Hahn's going to save you money. That's why he's been having this job forever, despite being bad at his job. And they don't get, like, we all know the saying, Jerry cares more about being in second place and making money than being in first place and winning championships, despite the fact that you make more money when you win. So this team's going to be mid. We're all going to cover them. We're all going to laugh while watching them, because it's almost Stockholm syndrome at this point. So
yeah,
it'll be fun. It'll be fun in the sense that sometimes it's better to laugh than cry. And we'll all be laughing at this team instead of crying about them.
And look how Sonny Dante is about this team. He thinks they haven't even taken a step back. He thinks it's going to be another 81-win season. So look at this. You may be the leader in the clubhouse right now, Dante, at 81 wins.
That's what I feel. I feel like another season of streaky coming. Like, just enough. They're going to win just enough for us to be like, ooh, maybe. And then they're going to lose enough to be like, God, they suck. And I just see another season of complete angst like that. Like, I think Dante is right. I think it's, you know, we're going to be like 81 and 81 or right around there.
And the scary thing about that, Melissa, is because of just this turn of 1 year, we're all, you know, again, we're walking. It's like, it's like a death march into 2023. If they do that, it's going to be like, oh, we're probably actually going to get pulled in a way that, like, last year's like, oh, you know, right. They just got, they won four in a row to get to 500. Okay. Yeah. Talk to me when they're 10 over or when they're in first place. This year with low expectations, man, if they're better than 500, I'm like, well, you know what? This was a step forward season, even though we're still in this contention window. The perceptions will have changed. And I'm sure, at least if not us really smart Southside Sox writer fans, don't think that way. Well, the fan base in general, who can tend to maybe be at times a little bit broader on their in their takes, will be like, oh man, yeah, they're coming back. This one young guy is doing really well. They're coming back. Gavin Cheats isn't so bad in right field. Yeah, well, we're going to get all sorts of really creepy takes.
You have to say something like Gavin Cheats isn't bad in right field. There is no contention window. The window got shut.
Oh, I think the window is shut. Like, but I think we'll get confirmation.
That window was closed so quickly. again, thank you, Rick Hahn. I don't know if he goes by Richard or not, but if he does, he is a dick, so it makes sense.
To Dante's point in his reference that we've all lived through terrible seasons, actually, that's specific. I was about to ask everybody, okay, what's the worst season they've lived through? Technically, I think I was alive for, I think I should know. I was alive in 1970, and that was, I believe, the most losses in White Sox history. However, we have all lived through, because it was in the Rick Hahn era, three of the 15 worst White Sox seasons have come in the Rick Hahn era. I doubt this year will actually scrape that low, but the precedent is set that almost every other year we reach historic bad under Rick Hahn. And Lord help us if that's what's ahead for us. Because as much as we want to laugh, Dante, this is going to be a 6 months of this. At least for like a month or two last year, we could sort of say, nah, this can't be happening, right? Wait, come on.
Brett, I'm working retail. I have to laugh at all this. I'm used to laughing at pain. This, like, the White Sox lose anything more. If the White Sox lose anything less than 90 games, I'm going to be, like, upset and, like, annoyed, but I'll be fine.
Sure.
I'm just going to take, like another shift at the office. Well, I guess in my case, the pizza station.
I'm already just dead inside, so, like, it doesn't matter. You're just going to get more snark somehow in every single thing I publish.
It's January. We're in mid-season form.
The fact that you're going to choose
the Pirates, you're choosing the Pirates over the White Sox, just shows how, like, that's emblematic of how bad this team is.
But it's only because of Andrew McCutchen. I wouldn't normally do
exactly.
That.
Yeah, like, and that's the same reason, like, me and Malik have been talking about it. At some point, we're making a trip to Seattle to see Julio and crew because, like, I need fun baseball. The White Sox aren't going to provide that. I can't go to more than three Cubs games a year without, like, throwing up a little bit inside as much as I love my dad. And, like, there's not too many teams in the area. I guess I'll fake be a Brewers fan, but they're going to get rid of everyone, so they're out too. I just need the Pirates to make our day and, like, take Gavin Sheets and prospects that don't matter for Brian Reynolds, which they won't.
Hey, at least Pittsburgh's a beautiful park. None better. So, I mean, they got that going for them, which we don't. No diss on Sox Park, but it's not PNC. Anyone have any hope that there's still something to come that might brighten our spirits? I think there was a little mixed feeling before that Rick Hahn might still have a move that could make us say, okay, maybe we're going to be 83 win team.
Yeah. Before I give a prediction, I do have a response to that. Last year they missed a lot of time of Luis Robert being really healthy. He has an enormous amount of potential. Eloy Jimenez, I could see him easily clearing the 40 home run in a season mark. If he's healthy, of course, that's a huge if, but you know, that could happen. Giolito, we've seen him bounce back from being the worst pitcher in baseball in 2018 before. He wasn't that bad in 2022, and he has a track record for being resilient and fixing errors. And I do think he'll have a nice bounce back. And of course, the days of the 1-2 intentional walk are over. So, you know, that's one fewer thing to be worried about.
We presume it won't be worse.
Yeah.
Not a guarantee.
Yeah. If Grifol issues like an 0-2 intentional walk,
Because Rick told him to.
I'll quit cheering for this team, I think, if that happens. I do think they're a pretty darn average team in spite of all those reasons for hope. But I mean, I don't know if things go their way, maybe they have a chance. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I'm not upset. I'm not like as upset as a lot of the people here, it feels like, but, still in 2023, we shouldn't be going into the season thinking this is probably about an average team. So that in and of itself is disappointing.
There's a schism forming in the Indianapolis field office. Stay tuned for the drama. Joe, you can pour mouth sort of at the end of that all you want. I think you have backed your way into the official pep talker for this season because Dante was 8.500. Man, Loy with 40 homers and Luis Robert is suddenly going to be healthy, man. I like the way you're thinking. I think, you know, you've been drinking, but I think that you're the guy who is going to be maybe in charge of the pep talk at this point, unless somebody wants to somehow outdo Joe going to into the season. Our predictions posts, which have been over the top positive. First year, everybody predicted playoffs, but me, that's like 14 out of 15. Last year, everybody predicted playoffs. Not that there wasn't crazy thinking. That was, you know, sort of taking the field there. It's going to be very different this year. Last year, I don't think anybody picked the Sox for less than 90 wins. I wonder if anyone will pick the White Sox for 90 wins, this year. Just food for thought. Got a few months to put that together, but, yeah, Joe, you might find yourself sort of near the top, even though you don't move. You might still just pick the same number each time. I might pick the same number each time, and we'll find the whole field has fallen below us, beginning with Crystal at 53, and then somebody maybe will pick like 91. That's good. It's going to be a much crazier range.
There has to be balance in this office, okay?
That's true.
It's very positive.
Half the pizza's pepperoni, you know, half a sausage. I get it. Come on, you know, that's how it works. You got to get along. Jeez. All right. Well, Joe just gave us some sunshine there. You know, but I mean, still doesn't involve moves. I don't think there are moves to be made. I mean, I don't know what Rick Hahn has up his sleeve, but if he does have something, it's probably not going to be good. So maybe it's best that this team stands pat and just hopes for better health. Hopes that Cleveland falls to them and Minnesota decides to be afraid to embrace the gift that was the first half of the season last year. Still, it's hard to forget the fact that they looked so ready to quit just at the end of the first half. The Sox rolled over them. The Sox weren't rolling over anybody. That was really weird. I mean, they had the division sort of in their hands and said, we don't want it, and then fell behind the White Sox. Very embarrassing, Twins. Sorry, crawl all you want about bringing back Carlos Correa, but that's the team you had last year with Carlos Correa. I believe Dante's pointed that out, or somebody, Jordan did. Other thoughts? Are we excited about this coming season, or is this more like you sort of want to avert your eyes and maybe something good will happen that'll get your attention?
Yeah, maybe I'll cap this off with a strange little bit of semi, I don't want to say optimism, but maybe I fall more on the Joe side of things. I think first I'll say that I don't think they're done yet. I don't think there will necessarily be an exciting move, but you know, some things, this offseason hasn't necessarily progressed as planned. Generally speaking, I don't think most people, or I doubt the Sox were anticipating Carlos Correa returning to the Twins. They're almost certainly going to make a trade for a starting pitcher before the spring starts. They've been connected to Pablo Lopez of Miami quite a bit already. They're probably not done either. You know, we get into a situation where Cleveland's for sure gotten stronger with Mike Zunino and Josh Bell, in addition to, you know, taking everyone by surprise just with Andrés Giménez and Amed Rosario and Josh Naylor all being better than anybody thought. You know, if Minnesota goes through with some of these moves, you know, there's still a fair number of free agents out there. I don't think it'll be a super exciting move, but you know, someone in that Adam Duvall mold might make sense between now and the spring, because I still do, you know, when you have the Twins bringing in Carlos Correa, I just really have a hard time seeing going into the season with you know, Gavin Sheets in right field and some combination of, you know, Lenin Sosa and Romy Gonzalez, whoever wins that battle in spring training, both in the starting lineup. I think that might be a little bit too much for even Rick to be able to save face with. So, you know, as pessimistic as I am, and as much as it's likely to be a mediocre team, I think you also kind of have to think of it in the same way as last year when they're projected for 93, 94 wins and everyone was really happy. And given the offseason they were having, the thought was also, though, you know, this is a lot closer to like a mid-80s, low-80s win team than we might think, because a lot of things could go wrong. And guess what? A lot of things did go wrong, and it ended up even worse than that, actually. So, you know, if they'll probably wind up with the projection in that 83, 84, 85 win range, maybe a touch lower, which I think our expectations are in line here. But, you know, there's a lot of things that could go right, too. I'm not expecting 95 wins in the same way I might have been a year ago, but I'm not totally resigned to just another, you know, slow death march of a season. You know, there's, I think, more of a chance that the course gets stayed a little bit than maybe we're giving it credit for.
Okay, I'm going to use Malachi's Leury Garcia erasure to launch into a final speed round to wind up this podcast, and that is, let's not forget that Rick Hahn absolutely backed into and lucked into two of his top performing players last year. Johnny Cueto signed only because Lance Lynn only, we don't really know, but it's just sort of how it played out, because Lance Lynn busted his knee. And obviously he was a massively, a huge part of the rotation. And the gift that was, Elvis Andrus, from the A's, basically literally handed to the White Sox. So speed round question, beginning with Malachi, will the White Sox not, I'm not expecting Rick Hahn to pull that rabbit out of his hat in spring training or even during the season. Will he even between now and then pick up a positive WAR player for the team, between now and opening day?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a stronger free agent presence now than there was at this time last year.
Okay. Super Joe.
Positive WAR, yes, I do think so.
Okay, it can be 0.1, it can be nothing, but it still counts as positive. Crystal, I think I know your answer, but give it to me anyway.
I was going to say yes.
Oh my goodness, okay. All right, okay, keep the faith. Melissa?
No, I don't think so. I think he's done. I think he got his Andrew Benintendi, and he's just flying high as a kite, and
yeah,
and he's good to go. So
it's not necessarily that he won't pick up anybody. It's that he'll pick up a guy who's negative. And not boy, good. Do I see it.
Yeah.
Dante, what's your thoughts?
Yes, because Juris and Profar, you are White Sox.
Okay. Well, that
that's
would count.
What's gonna happen.
All right, that
that's
would
my
count.
Predictions. Like Juris and
I like
Profar.
That one too.
I will because like that.
He's the last he's the last Scott Boris guy that I could think of that matters on the board. Mm-hmm. And if they want to do anything that's even slightly impressive, Justin Profar just checked to make sure that my point would be fine with positive WAR. 3.3 WAR, I think it was. So, you know, go for it.
Fair
like,
enough.
Go sign Justin Profar. He could play multiple positions. He could play second base, which saves us from Romy and Lurie and Lynn and like. Just go get Justin Profar since he was too cheap to go get Gene Segura.
For the record, I'm with Melissa. I think all the pixie dust was used last year to get the White Sox even to 500. I don't think he's going to be as lucky this year. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll have more podcasts as soon as this week, so tune in with us. So we'll be back sooner than you're ready for us.